The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
This is the dirty work that Israel is doing for all of us. We're also affected by this regime. This Mullah regime has brought death and destruction over the world, with attacks, with killings, with Hezbollah, with Hamas on October the 7th, 2023 in Israel. This would not have been possible without the regime in Tehran. The supplies of drones to Russia from Tehran. Yes. The dirty work that Israel did here. I can only say that I have the highest respect that the Israeli army was courageous enough, that the Israeli government was courageous enough to do this. Otherwise, we possibly would have seen this terror by this regime for months and years, and possibly with a nuclear weapon in their hand.
Trump made very clear in his inauguration speech, not least, he said that America's success under his leadership would be measured by the wars that it avoided, among many other measures for success. You know, he made it absolutely clear that he is a deal maker. He sees himself as a deal maker. He's not really a hawk, and he does not like forever wars. He doesn't like the U.S. being tangled up in foreign affairs wars that, in his view, often have little to do with the United States' interests. Set against that, of course, he has also said, not as often, but very, very many times, Iran must not be allowed to obtain nuclear weapons. So those two things, of course, can be contradictory. We now will see which of those he prioritizes in this particular situation.
Politico says it's the most consequential decision of his presidency. The Trump administration doesn't want to barrel into risky missions or regime changes, but they recognize there's a historic window of opportunity to solve a problem that's vexed U.S. presidents for decades. How to fully eliminate the Iranian nuclear program.
What do you say to the Supreme Leader of Iran says that they will not
say good luck?
They had bad intentions. You know, for 40 years they've been saying death to America, death to Israel, death to anybody else that they didn't like. They were bullies. They were schoolyard bullies. And now they're not bullies anymore, but we'll see what happens. We'll see. The next week is going to be very big, maybe less than a week. Maybe less. But is there anybody here that said it would be okay to have a hostile, zealots, really, but to have a hostile country have a nuclear weapon that could... This is just not a threat you can have. And we've been threatened by Iran for many years. You know, if you go back and look at my history, if you go back 15 years, I was saying we cannot let Iran get a nuclear weapon. I've been saying it for a long time, and I mean it more now than I ever meant.
About whether you are moving closer, you believe the U.S. is moving closer to striking Iranian nuclear facilities. Where's your mindset on that?
I can't say that, right? You don't seriously think I'm going to answer that question. Will you strike the Iranian nuclear component? And what time exactly, sir? Sir, would you strike it? Would you please inform us so we can be there and watch? I mean, you don't know that I'm going to even do it. You don't know. I may do it. I may not do it. I mean, nobody knows what I'm going to do. I can tell you this, that... Iran's got a lot of trouble, and they want to negotiate. And I said, why didn't you negotiate with me before all this death and destruction? Why didn't you negotiate? I said to the people, why didn't you negotiate with me 2 weeks ago? You could have done fine. You would have had a country.
What does unconditional surrender mean?
Well, you know what it means. Unconditional.
Can you explain it for those who don't?
Two very simple words. A very simple. Unconditional surrender. That means I've had it. Okay, I've had it. I give up. No more. Then we go blow up all the nuclear stuff that's all over the place there.
I want to bring back this statement that we do have from Iran's Supreme Leader. Take a look at this here on your screen, in which he said, quote, "Let the Americans know that the Iranian nation is not one to surrender, and any military intervention on their part will undoubtedly result in irreparable damage." This was only the Ayatollah's second public comment since Israel launched its attack against Iran last week.
The president of the United States calling for Iran to unconditionally surrender. And there you see Iran's defiant response. And so what next? Pretty amazing to watch this unfold. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live video stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. Yesterday, I talked about that column by Andrew Roberts, the historian, where he talked about the need for some ruthlessness. And I skipped over the example he gave from World War II. But he says here on Wednesday, July 3rd, 1940, Churchill had a decision before him as hard as any he ever had to make. And in his long career of statesmanship, if the Vichy French fleet stationed at Oran in Algeria were to fall into the hands of the Germans, as seemed highly likely, it would, when combined with the German and Italian navies, pose an existential threat to his country, which, after the fall of France, was already gearing itself up for the Battle of Britain. So Churchill said, listen, we've got to get this French navy. And France was waffling. France wouldn't commit to it, even moving the navy out, off to Canada or somewhere. And what did Churchill do? He took out the navy. He killed, I think it's about 1,300 Frenchmen in the process. This was an ally of Great Britain. What would the Tucker crowd say about action like that? We're living in a totally different time. You're seeing some Churchillian leadership from Bibi Netanyahu, but outside of that, I mean, who would have done that? Who would consider doing something like that? Just having the vision, knowing that if these ships fall into German hands, that poses an existential threat to Western civilization. It was one of the most difficult decisions that Churchill ever made. Andrew Roberts says Benjamin Netanyahu certainly feels the weight of history on his shoulders. The son of a distinguished historian and an avid reader of books by and about Churchill, he said 3 days ago, generations from now, history will record our generation stood its ground, acted in time, and secured our common future. And then he goes on and talks about that Churchillian ruthlessness, as I mentioned on yesterday's show. And so here we are, as I say, Donald Trump has called on Iran to unconditionally surrender. And Iran says it's not going to happen. What was the quote? If you come after us, you're going to suffer irreparable damage. So this follows the tweet the other day where Donald Trump said, you know, we haven't killed you, not yet anyway, talking to the Supreme Leader. And so the back and forth has brought us to this point. What will happen when you call on someone to unconditionally surrender? There's really nothing left to say. I mean, the time for mean tweets are over. Now is the time to let those bunker busters do the talking, do the negotiating. And we'll see. It may happen. It may not happen. Because the spirit of appeasement is strong, of course, for the big picture overview. And this is one of our oldest booklets. And we were, if you think about just even the nuclear facilities, and, you know, there's appeasers that were saying, you know, we were years away from them getting a nuke. Others say, no, we're weeks away. That's why we need to take them out. But you just step back and you think, perspective, the sure word of prophecy, tomorrow's news today. I'll play some clips for you later. where my father was warning about Iran as the king of the South in the early 1990s. Who else was doing that? When you had the first Gulf War and threats in Iraq and, I mean, even Saudi Arabia. But here was the Trumpet magazine. And then soon those articles, those early articles, became the early version of the King of the South. Now it's a pretty big booklet. If you haven't received a copy of this, we offer it without cost or obligation. God identified the King of the South, and God's servant was sounding the alarm. We'll see a little bit later that Benjamin Netanyahu, he certainly was early on as well. For 30-some years, there's an article in the Jerusalem Post today talking about how 30 years on, Israel exercising restraint. Anytime they would lash out, they'd have some success, but then you've got Western nations always telling them to dial it back. Because you've got the Tucker crowd that say, don't you dare lash out at that French fleet, because Frenchmen could die. Imagine, there were probably people at that time that said, don't do it, to Churchill. And Churchill had to exercise some leadership. He had to show some courage. He had to look at the big picture. For 30 years, we've been told they're gonna be nice. Let them get their nukes. Just don't lash out at them. I mean, if you do, it's gonna escalate. Everything will escalate. We've used this quote a jillion times from Churchill, where he says the offensive is 3 or 4 times as hard as passively enduring from day to day. It therefore requires all possible help in the early stages. Nothing is easier than to smother it in the cradle. It's hard to go on the offensive. It takes courage to make a preemptive strike for the safety of your nation, for relative peace to continue. The context of this quote, by the way, here again, Churchill was First Lord of the Admiralty, and he was urging the British cabinet to put mines, I forget where it was, but there were these German boats just given pretty much access in and out, no problem. And Churchill just wanted to do something to take out some of those ships, those boats. And as it seems, every time there's people in the ears of the powerful saying, now don't do that because it can escalate. What if it escalates? What if the Germans are really upset by that and they fire back? Well, that's always a risk when you've got people around the world that are just, I mean, their focus is on murdering people, destroying the Jews, destroying America. At least in this case, I mean, as President Trump keeps noting, he has been consistent on they cannot have a nuclear weapon. They can't have a nuclear bomb. There was a clip or a montage of it online. It just went on for like 15 minutes. We took about a minute of it. Here's clip 11.
You cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon. You cannot let it happen because bad things will happen if that happens. But everybody stopped. They were ready to make a deal. We would have made a deal that was great for everybody. No nuclear weapons. You can't give them nuclear weapons. Now they're going to have a nuclear weapon. Don't let Iran have nuclear weapons. That's my only thing I have to tell you today. Don't let them have it. They would have never had them, including Iran. They can't have a nuclear weapon. That's all. They can't have nuclear weapons. It's too destructive, too powerful. They can't have it. But I wanted to make a deal with them. No nuclear weapons. You can't have nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are the single greatest threat to this world, to the whole world. And Viktor Orban understands that, and some others do too. I just don't want them to have a nuclear weapon. and they weren't going to have one, and they cannot have a nuclear weapon. That was the only thing. The one thing I said, you cannot have. I just didn't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. I said, you know, we're going to make a great deal. Everybody's going to be happy. You're going to be rich as hell again. Everything's going to be great. But you cannot have a nuclear weapon.
You can't let Iran have nuclear weapons.
Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. Very simple. They cannot have a nuclear weapon.
And then more recently, of course, there were overtures to reach out to the mullahs for negotiations. And those didn't work out. Now the president's calling for unconditional surrender. And the Supreme Leader, for his part, has answered back saying, if you come after us, you're going to get hit hard. This is from the Morning Brief. Iran launched two ballistic missile barrages last night against Israel. They were intercepted, I think most of them. Israel has had a lot of success in severely weakening Iran's nuclear capabilities. But without American help, Israel cannot end Iran's program once and for all. They can't take out Fordo. Maybe they've had some success with Natanz. But to get the bunker buster in there, now Israel, for its part, has said, even without American support, even without American firepower, we're going to find a way to dismantle the entire program. We have to. We have to. Further on in the Morning Brief, it says how Germany, you saw a bit of that in the cold open from Mertz, how Germany reacts to the ongoing crisis may be even more important than how America reacts. That's because Bible prophecy states that it will be Germany that will ultimately deal with the Iran problem. That's discussed in this little booklet, The King of the South. How the Iran problem will be dealt with. Finally, when it's all said and done, you've got to stay grounded in Bible prophecy. But certainly, like I said yesterday, I mean, we're definitely seeing some Churchillian leadership on the part of Israel. A rising lion, a lion-like spirit. Listen to Nigel Farage from the UK, what his take is on whether or not America should get involved. Clip 8.
What are your thoughts about that group that are seemingly annoyed at any upscaling of what's happening in Iran?
Well, I mean, Steve Bannon's a very good friend of mine, but I think he's sort of almost sometimes wanted to sort of shield America from the rest of the world in every way, which, of course, doesn't actually work anyway because of the interconnections that we have globally. So, yeah, you're going to get a lot of that strong MAGA wing say we shouldn't be involved in any way at all. And look, you know, I mean, I have to say that Afghanistan going on for 20 years, it was never winnable.
Yep.
Even at the height of the British Empire, twice the British lost wars in Afghanistan, and we'd learnt nothing from it. This is different. This is different. This is not about putting in American troops. It's not about a massive commitment for us. This is an opportunity, a real opportunity to overthrow a truly brutal and evil regime. And it could happen more quickly than you think.
So they could get hit hard. But, you know, you read between the lines there and you see it's not going to be 100% kill shot. It never is anymore. The courage to take out an entire friendly fleet of ships, if you have to. Those days are gone. So it could be hit hard. It could be set back. But as we know, Bible prophecy says they're going to be a problem. And eventually Germany's going to deal with them. And you see Germany, even now, with Mertz, of all people, talking about Israel doing the dirty work for the rest of us in the West. And how that Iran is behind October 7 and all these other attacks through Hezbollah and Hamas. But that wing of the Republican Party that just wants to shield America, isolate America, and not get involved in anything overseas. I mean, those voices, they're pretty prominent. And they have big audiences. Listen to this from Tucker. He sat down with Senator Cruz yesterday, and I guess Tucker sees this as some big gotcha moment, when in fact it just seems pretty silly. But you can see why he's going after Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz has been pretty outspoken in saying America should be supporting Israel in a stronger way, even. But listen to this, clip two.
How many people live in Iran, by the way?
I don't know the population.
At all?
No, I don't know the population.
You don't know the population of the country you seek to topple?
How many people live in Iran?
92 million.
Okay. Yeah.
How could you not know that?
I don't sit around memorizing population tables.
Well, it's kind of relevant because you're calling for the overthrow of the government.
Why is it relevant whether it's 90 million or 80 million or 100 million? Why is that relevant?
Because if you don't know anything about the country...
I didn't say I don't know anything about
the country. Okay, what's the ethnic mix of Iran?
They are Persians and predominantly Shia.
Okay, you don't know anything about Iran. So
okay,
I am not the
Tucker Carlson expert on Iran.
You're a senator who's calling for the overthrow of the government.
You're the one who claims
about the country.
No, you don't know anything about the country. You're the one who claims they're not trying to murder Donald Trump.
You know, another point that can be made. I think I have it later in my notes. But you look at what man has, leave aside what we've said about Iran for the last 30, 40 years, but just look at the hope that man has put in every type of government, every kind of leader, every kind of negotiator, and we just still can't make it work. I mean, here you've got two conservatives arguing. One in the gotcha moment. It's really kind of kooky when you think of it, to pin him down because he doesn't know the exact population of Iran. But this is where we are. Tucker's, I mean, he is out there calling for appeasement, pure and simple. And yes, we've had some forever wars. And as you heard from Faraj, there have been wars that have gone on for 20 years. But that doesn't mean it was wrong from the start. It was misguided from the start. Who was saying from the moment it started, I'm talking about the war against terrorism following 9/11, that in order to solve this problem, or at least set it way back, you've got to go for the head of the snake. That would be Iran. So we were saying that in 2001. And before that, all through the 90s, identifying Iran as the main problem, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. That has been God's warning. And today, I mean, again, those that want to just shield America from everything that's happening abroad, there are plenty of problems to focus on at home. There's no doubt about that. And a lot of that's been brought on by an attack at home. I mean, America has been attacked. Satan has tried to blot out even the name of Israel. That's his objective. And he works through madmen. And there's a lot of, as I've said in recent weeks, well, there's a lot of madmen and there's a lot of people with peace derangement syndrome. Listen to Tucker with Steve Bannon the other day, clip six.
And I am saying this because I'm really afraid that my country's going to be further weakened by this. I think we're going to see the end of American empire, obviously. Other nations would like to see that, and this is a perfect way to scuttle the USS America on the shoals of Iran. But it's also going to end, I believe, Trump's presidency and effectively end it. And so that's why I'm saying this.
What do you mean by that? That's coming from you. Look,
I knew Bush. I knew George W. Bush. We had, you know, family connections to Bush. I knew Bush personally. I still see Bush sometimes. And, you know, of course, he hates me, and he does because I criticized him on Iraq. And that war is the sum total from a historical perspective of his administration. But I knew him, and he had all kinds of plans for the things that he wanted to do. But once
domestically, right,
to improve the country.
Right.
And you may agree or disagree, but like in his mind, he wasn't just
about the invasion of Iraq in March of
2000. Oh, no, no. He was going to redo Social Security. 100%. All types of it. He was going to take care of the entitlements issue.
And he really thought it was going to work.
Yep.
And you could laugh at that or whatever. But the point is, the second you get enmeshed in a real war, not a fake, let's go bomb the villagers and declare success, though we don't even have a good track record. Like, why are the Houthis still there? No, I mean, there's a whole other question, right, which is how prepared is the U.S. military for a real conflict? And the answer is totally unprepared. Scary unprepared. I don't think people understand that. But anyway, the only reason I'm saying any of this is because I really, really care. And it's been what a disaster for me personally. I mean, it's like the last thing I wake up, you know, all these texts, you know, well, I can't believe you're so evil. You hate this, that. I just want to restate, I don't hate anybody. And to the extent I do hate people, I try to repent of it. I don't want to hate anybody. I really don't. I just don't want my country to be further weakened or destroyed by another one of these wars. And boy, if you can't connect the dots after 25 years of this, you're either too dumb to participate in the conversation or you're, like Mark Levin, just a liar who doesn't care.
So the arguing continues. You notice, though, at the start of it, that clip, he talks about how that nations want to see the end of the American empire. And he's right. He's right. Do you think Iran wants to see the end of the American empire? They've been chanting it for decades. So everyone's got their idea of what's dangerous or where the danger's coming from. And what we're actually seeing is the danger of democracy, where everybody's got to have a voice. Everybody's got to give an opinion. Everybody's got to be in the ear of the man who makes the decisions, telling them, don't do it. It might escalate things. It might make the Germans upset. And what it does to our leaders is it makes them hesitant. It makes them indecisive. And you just get into the rhetoric, the back and forth. We're seeing the weakness of democracy on display. We had an article, this was back at the start of the fake presidency. We spent a lot of time during the Joe Biden years talking about that prophecy in 2 Kings 14 and how that there was no helper for America. And we were in the midst of bitter affliction. I mean, you talk about dangers. And we were sounding the alarm on that. And Donald Trump, to his credit, he fought against it. Fight, fight, fight. He was nearly assassinated fighting against it. He was nearly ruined fighting against it in court. And just like my father said in that Key of David, we played the clips yesterday. I mean, right now, you need a spirit of fight, fight, fight. You need a warrior spirit because, yes, there are enemies that want to see the end of the American empire. They want to see the end of the Jewish state. And so what do? Well, you've got to have, at times, a little Churchillian ruthlessness. You've got to have the courage to maybe do something preemptively. But it's easy to hesitate. It's easy to delay. It's easy to be indecisive. You step back and look at the bigger picture, as we said in this April 2021 article. With no helper for Israel, many terrible things are going to occur. Already, other nations are betraying America, as well as Britain and Israel. Iran, as we said in 2021, is openly threatening to develop a nuclear weapon. You've got all these dangers. And then here in America, in the UK, less so in Israel, but boy, all three of these nations, these Israelite nations, just bitterly, deeply divided. You see it in their courts. You see it in politics. You see it in the newspapers. What a time to have such internal division and strife when you've got all of these looming dangers around from the outside that want to see the end of these empires. They've been dreaming about it. And they've been waiting patiently in some cases. because they're looking at what we're doing to ourselves. Look at the sickness from within. It says here, the change in leadership in America has only made Europe more determined to become more independent. They threw their lot in with China at the end of last year. It says here, Americans could know what is happening if they just, again, this is from 2021, if they just knew the Bible and knew God, they would know Satan is real. They would know this. They would know who's really behind these dangers, whether domestic or abroad. It says here, everyone is corrupt. Nobody is honest. He's talking about Judges 21 and verse 25, where it says that in the end, we're just going to be, every man's going to be doing what seems right in his own eyes. Everyone is corrupt, my father wrote. Nobody is honest, and everyone is doing what's right in his own eyes. Satan is trying to blot out the name of Israel. It says the good news is God has a master plan to save Israel permanently. But as we keep saying, I mean, why did God do it? Why did God tilt the head last year around this time? Why did God bring him back, Jeroboam or President Trump? He's trying to get our attention. Now you don't see the dangers quite as much at home, or at least they're being dealt with, some of them. But we're living in a perilous and dangerous world, as Paul said in 2 Timothy 3. And God wants to awaken us so that we can turn to Him and not only understand these many prophecies that we describe in booklets like this, but that we turn to Him in repentance, that we consider our ways, as the prophet Hosea wrote, and we turn to Him in humility, in repentance, in faith, and get behind His work, and get behind His family, and get behind His watchmen. You look at some of the statements my father was making in the 1990s. I mean, really, even ahead of Bibi Netanyahu. Someone sent me this interview that Netanyahu had with Glenn Beck. This is from 2006, so almost 20 years ago. And we've put together a montage of it. It's about 10 minutes, so it's a longer clip. But given where we are today, it's a fascinating discussion that these two had back in 2006, clip 10.
Could you explain that?
Iran is Germany, and it's 1938, except that this Nazi regime that is in Iran, it's a religious kind of fanaticism, but it wants to dominate the world, annihilate the Jews, but also annihilate America. Remember, we're the small Satan, you're the big Satan.
Right.
We're just the first way station en route to you. So there's this fundamental fanaticism that is there. It's a messianic cult. It's a religious messianic cult that believes in the apocalypse, and they believe they have to expedite the apocalypse to bring the collapse of the West.
See, nobody...
If the lunatics escape from the asylum, that's one thing. But if they can get their hands on nuclear weapons, that's another. And this is that kind of cult. It's the cult of the Mahdi, a holy man that disappeared 1,000 years ago. And the president of Iran believes that he was put in here on Earth to bring this holy man back in a great religious war between the true Muslim believers and the infidels, and millions will die in this apocalypse, and the Muslim believers will go to heaven. That's dangerous if they have nuclear weapons to realize this fantasy. And that is where the world is coming to. Now, people said that of Hitler in the 1930s. They said, this man has a mad ideology, very fanatic, very dangerous, and if he gets his hands on the military power, he would use it. Hitler did use it. But Hitler developed atomic weapons, tried to develop them, only after he embarked on a world conflict. Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, is first trying to develop nuclear weapons and then going about his mad fantasy of a global conflict. So he has to be stopped. I think when you have something as fanatic and as dangerous as this, the question now is not whether he should be stopped, But how is he going to be stopped? So I think the real problem is, do we let this mad idea, this fanatic regime, this messianic cult of the apocalypse, get their hands on atomic weapons? I think it's folly. And I don't think it's just an Israeli question, any more so than Hitler was just a Jewish question. Hitler started with the annihilation of the Jews, but pretty quickly moved on to threaten the entire world.
You know,
and America woke up late after 6 million Jews died.
Right.
But in our case, you know, we don't have to wake up dead in order for people to realize that he threatens America. We want to both defend ourselves, defend the Jewish state, certainly, but also defend America and free civilization against people who would extinguish our freedoms and our lives. As far as they're concerned, the only deal possible is the elimination of Israel. And even that would merely remove an obstacle on their way to Europe and on their way to the United States. Israel could disappear, and it wouldn't make a difference.
So,
because they're out to get you. They're not out to get us. We're simply standing in their way. They're not interested in Israel per se. They're interested in bringing down Western civilization led by the United States. That's why you're the great Satan, and we're just the little Satans. The Soviet Union had enough firepower to destroy the United States, but they realized that you would destroy them, so they were deterred. They were not suicidal. But militant Islam is suicidal. They often put their zealotry, their ideology, above their survival. That's why you didn't have any communist suicide bombers, but militant Islam produces hordes of them, battalions, and they smash into buildings in New York. Now, do you doubt that if, for example, Al-Qaeda had nuclear weapons, this city would not exist today?
I'd be gone.
None of the powers that have nuclear powers today have this zealotry, this mad ideology, but Iran does. So if Iran acquires it, and they think that you're their worst nemesis, we're just an underling, we're just your subordinate, we happen to be a small Satan, a small appendage of America. But their goal is to reverse 1,000 years of history, the rise of the West, the rise of America. This was a mistake of history that has to be corrected through this apocalypse. Don't wait for them to realize this. Don't let this...
People have said that I was nuts when I said before we went in to Iraq, it ain't about Iraq. This is about Iran. Right, wrong, and why?
I think you're right. I think in the larger, there's a pecking order here. I think Afghanistan was the first one. It dispatched Al-Qaeda. You got them. Right to do. Mm-hmm. By getting Iraq, you got Libya. Libya dismantled its nuclear program. But Libya and Saddam Hussein's Iraq were essentially neighborhood bullies, very dangerous, very poisonous. But you could either bring down their dictatorship or force them to become reborn, as Gaddafi is trying to be. They are not suicidal. Iran, if you got Iran, you would have folded the entire chain down, and you would have eliminated the most virulent and the most dangerous of the lot. This is a regime that seeks to influence a billion people worldwide, a billion Muslims. Now, granted, they're not going to influence a billion Muslims, but suppose they influence 10%. That's 130 million or over 100 million people. And it's not merely the ability to incite radicals in every Western capital or anywhere from San Francisco to Bali, Indonesia, and Bali and even north, south, anywhere. It is that they will have the nuclear weapons to back up terror. They'll have terror with a nuclear umbrella. So the terror that we've seen will be on a scale we haven't seen. And the greatest terror of all is that they may actually use atomic bombs against our cities and our countries.
Okay.
What you decide to do, it's an American decision.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you leave in phases, you leave with a timetable, you leave with no timetable, you stay in Iraq. Okay. Either way, if Iran acquires nuclear weapons next door, you lose Iraq. Not only do you lose Iraq, you lose the entire Middle East, and you lose control of the world oil supply, and your cities come under a nuclear threat of a crazy, fanatic regime. So the question is, why is the American debate exclusively focused on Iraq when you should look next door? And the last thing you should do, whatever you decide on Iraq, I would give one piece of advice. Do not mortgage that solution to the Iranians. Do not get into a situation where you're giving the Iranians any kind of license to develop their nuclear program in exchange for anything that they do with you in Iraq, do or not do. You should stop the Iranian nuclear program because it is a great threat to the security of the world and the security of the United States.
My biggest fear is that you're being set up. that Israel is going to, we're not going to do anything about it. The rest of the world is already starting to talk. Hey, let's talk peace with Iran. Let's bring Iran and Syria in as partners for peace, which is absolutely insane. You will be sitting in a position saying, okay, well, we can't deal with it. You'll go in and do something about it. And then the whole world will turn and say, it's Israel. We were close to peace.
Yeah, well, that's what they said about Czechoslovakia when they sacrificed it for Hitler. And they thought they'd have peace in their time and the Munich Accords. And it turned out to have been merely feeding the wolf and whetting its appetite. Okay. But I'll tell you one thing. Somebody has to take out the Iranian nuclear program.
Are you going to make a move if nobody else does on Iran? Do you feel that you would have to make a move if nobody else does to stop them?
If that's the only option, it has to be stopped. And if it means saving the life of the Jewish state and another 6 million Jews who live in Israel, then the answer is yes, because we reserve the right to live. The Jewish people are not going to be set up again for a second Holocaust by a man who denies the first Holocaust as he prepares our mass annihilation. I would say that there's a time factor. The longer you wait, the harder it becomes. The more firepower you need. The earlier you do it, the earlier you do it, you can actually avoid the need for military action. If you had, for example, a concerted international effort, you'd probably get Iran to back off. But the longer you wait, the more you have to get into the harder options, and the harder the options become. And I think that is unfortunate. But you ask me, what will the world look like if action were taken against Iran by us or by you? Would they retaliate? Yeah, of course. But they wouldn't have nuclear weapons to retaliate with. You do not want them to have these atomic bombs.
I get that.
We always learn. In history, we see that the free societies, they always get it at the end. But the question is, do they need what Churchill called a jarring gong of self-preservation? Do you sort of have to be woken up from your stupor, from your sleep, to realize that you've got a new Hitler around the block and you have to take action? Do you let him first demolish a few countries and a few millions of people? Mm. I hope not. I hope that we have the ability to learn something from history. And certainly I think that we're facing a juncture of history unlike any other, where primitive religious creeds are trying to acquire the weapons of mass death. That has never happened before, because nuclear weapons have been around only for half a century. And now the most primitive creed on Earth is trying to get the most advanced weapons on Earth. And we better wake up. We better hear the jarring gong of self-preservation and act to preserve our lives, our cities, our children, our civilization in time.
It's interesting to see that looking back after 19 years. Google here says that he was PM from 96 to 99, and then again from 2009 to 2021, and then obviously he is today. So that interview there was when he wasn't prime minister, but as you see, he's been sounding that alarm ever since. I mean, he's in many ways the leader of the free world right now. I mean, no disrespect to Donald Trump, but he said there, notice this is something Donald Trump used to say a lot when he was campaigning, when he was literally taking a bullet. He would tell the American people, look, their real target is you, but I'm just standing in their way. And that's what Bibi was saying right there. Look, the mullah's big target. Don't forget, you're the big Satan. The big target is you, is America. And I'm just standing in their way. Little Israel is just standing in their way. They'd love to see the end of the American empire and the elimination of the Jewish state as well. This is from the Jerusalem Post. Leadership is the courage to act first, driven by unyielding conviction, forging a path through resistance and doubt before others recognize its necessity. It says, for 20 months, Israel has exemplified this principle, standing as the West's resolute bastion against the forces of radical Islam. Whether the Khomeiniist ideology of Iran's mullahs or the Muslim Brotherhood's murderous actions, it says, as the spearhead against Tehran's axis of terror, Israel has fought not only on the battlefield, but also against the radical ideas that have taken root. Further on, it says, the West, lulled into complacency by decades of liberal peace since World War II, has developed a kind of autoimmune disease, forgetting that its freedoms were won through sacrifice and toil against totalitarian forces. I mean, this has been modern history. It's always been a fight. We're reminded on Memorial Day and other days like that of the rivers of blood that spilled for us to preserve our freedoms. It says here, Israel's actions have created a tipping point with the potential collapse of Iran's regime rivaling the fall of the Soviet Union in geopolitical significance. Goes on and talks about a seismic shift. It's a big deal to deal with it now, 20 years on. How close were they, Iran, to getting a nuclear weapon? As we've been discussing, the team here, it may be that God wanted our dance production, Celtic Throne 2, out of Israel. They're now out, by the way, on their way to London. But God, I have more notes on this very point. God intervening to protect his family before the bombs, the retaliation, before those bombs started to drop. I'll talk more about God's work being right at the center of all of these earth-shaking events on tomorrow's show. Speaking of God's work, let me just play this clip from, I think this is 2008. So this is in this period where Netanyahu is not, you know, prime minister. He's making the rounds like you just saw there on Glenn Beck's show at that time. And this is from my father's program, The Key of David. I'm pretty sure it's from 2006. So this is right around the time that you saw that November 2006 interview with BB. Here's clip 12.
Notice what this quote from the Inter Press Service news agency, January the 26th, 2006, where it says, Likud leader Benjamin Netanyahu, who resigned last year in protest over the Gaza withdrawal, declared that the unilateral pullout had strengthened hardline Palestinian groups like Hamas and contributed to its electoral victory. The state of Hamastan, as he calls it, has been created. This is a quote from him, Netanyahu. The state of Hamastan has been created in front of our very eyes, a satellite of Iran in the image of the Taliban. He said the policy of unreciprocated withdrawal was a reward to Hamas terror. So you can see that he disagreed with the Ariel Sharon and pulling out of Gaza and even resigned as a result of that. Now, the Jews are going to have an election on March the 28th, and it could be, just could be, that Mr. Netanyahu might win the election. Now, he had virtually no chance before this Hamas victory, but he has been telling the people that that when they just unilaterally pulled out of Gaza and places like that and didn't ask for anything in return, that makes the Hamas terrorists feel like that's a victory, and it makes all the Palestinians feel the same way. And so they voted the Hamas terrorists in a landslide. Now, you see, before the election, things were all very, very different. But now we may see Netanyahu get in there and perhaps bring a certain stability to that part of the world so God's message can go out to them and warn them about what is coming. Now, I don't know that, but again, I know the direction that those prophecies are going.
Wow, that's quite a statement there at the end. We may see Netanyahu return, which he did in 2009, to just bring a little more stability to that region. He's Israel's longest serving prime minister now, and he's leading the charge. He's leading the free world in its fight against radical Islam. What has happened over the course of these 30, well, my father even alluded to it, Sharon giving up Gaza, basically, turning it over to Hamas. And Bibi at the time was saying, you've made Hamastan. You've given the mullahs in Iran a foothold in Israel's neighborhood. Hamas came in, they won in a landslide. How does that happen? Well, because the spirit of hatred for Jews, it's all across that region. And really, we're seeing it all over the world, aren't we? Satan hates Jews. The only Jews he hates more than the Jews in Israel are spiritual Jews, God's family. And there were quite a few from God's family in Israel just last week. God is working behind the scenes. He's furthering his work. He's doing things like bringing Jeroboam back. He's brought Prime Minister Netanyahu back. And you're getting all this prescient insight from God's work. The Key of David, the Trumpet magazine. I mean, it should be anyway. Faith building. We've talked a lot about Judah's wound and how that the peace process, it really undermines Israel's position. It takes away opportunities for peace. And Hamas is a perfect example of that. Israel, some 20 years ago, saying, listen, in an effort to make peace, we'll just move out of Gaza. All those images of Israelis being literally dragged out of Gaza. And then immediately, the Palestinians turn it over to Hamas. That was their preferred government in Little Gaza, the Gaza Strip. And look at what Hamas has been doing ever since. It shows you what happens when the spirit of appeasement. Listen, we don't want to escalate anything. We don't want to offend Hamas in Little Gaza. So we'll move out. We'll give them their own country, basically. We'll give them self-rule. Well, how did that turn out? You could make a case, had Bibi been in there during that period between 99 and 2009, that there would be no Hamas, that Israel would still be in the Gaza Strip. Commentary magazine, the world had 30 years of Israeli restraint and failed to stop Iran. 30 years of calling on Israel to restrain, to evacuate, to give land to terrorists. And what did the rest of the world do? This article says, it's quoting an Israeli leader, Iran prevents Palestinians from agreeing to stop terrorism. Iran encourages extreme Islamic movements in moderate Arab regimes to try to undermine the regimes that support peace. Iran is responsible with the other extreme Islamic groups for the setup of international terror. The article says, guess who said this? It says, and in addition, Iran tries to build military capabilities, conventional and non-conventional. As you know, Russia and China decided to sell nuclear power plants to Iran. I warn the world, the acquirement of these nuclear power plants by Iran can really bring about terrible developments, not only in the Middle East, but all over the world. Who said this? It's not Benjamin Netanyahu. The words were spoken by Yitzhak Rabin in 1995, less than 2 years after signing the Oslo Accords and 6 months before he was felled by an assassin's bullet. If you're old enough to remember the history, Bill Clinton leading the charge. Listen, land for peace is the way to go. Shake hands with terrorists. Have negotiations. He was warning Yitzhak Rabin in 1995 about the Iranian threat, and the world did nothing. Bibi was brought back, just as my father said in that 2006 Key of David, to bring back maybe a little bit of stability and for the sake of God's work, getting the message out. God's work is uppermost in his mind. And there is a real spirit world. And it's swirling right now. That's another point I had in the section I don't have time for. Just how much we need, not just God's guidance, but of course his protection as well. His intervention in our lives. His timely intervention into his work. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.